affects the salmon fisheries on resident killer whales. And the impetus for this comes from the observation that we have these tools to assess and evaluate and shape fisheries management measures, including FRAM and the PSC model. We also have the CTC exploitation rate analysis, and to some extent, genetic stock identification has figured into fisheries management in recent years. The analysis of effects of Chinook abundance on the vital rates of resident killer whales has focused on the Park and Cope indices of Chinook abundance. So how do we reconcile these two? So I want to first go over what the tools we have, a brief summary of them. The first fishery assessment tool is the FRAM model. This is a single season model. It has four time steps, October through April, May and June, July through September, and then October through April of the following year. It includes 73 fisheries from southeast Alaska through California, 38 stocks from lower Georgia Strait through the Sacramento River. Each of these stocks is partitioned into marked and unmarked components, so in effect there's 76 stock components in the model. And it has very detailed documentation. The CTC model is a multi-year model. It has one time step per year, has 25 fisheries that range from southeast Alaska through central Oregon, and 30 stocks that range from southeast Alaska through central Oregon. Both models use the same basic algorithms. They're discrete, single-pool models. At least they're single pool with respect to the ocean abundance. They both then mature fish and treat the mature fish in terminal areas separately. But they treat the entire ocean population as a single pool of fish. Neither one of these includes natural mortality within the time steps. But because the FRAM has multiple time steps, this more closely approximates the competing risks model that the panel requested. FRAM omits southeast Alaska, northern BC, Grays Harbor, and upper Georgia Strait stocks. And it includes Fraser River fisheries, but it includes them just at a basal, average historic rate. So they're not actively modeled in the fishery. The CTC model omits Sacramento Fall and lower Columbia Spring stocks and fisheries south of central Oregon. Neither one of the models includes coastal Chinook stocks south of central Oregon or upper Columbia River Spring stocks. And the FRAM model has much more detail for Puget Sound stocks and the Puget Sound and lower U.S. fisheries. Then there's the CTC's exploitation rate analysis. This is a simple cohort analysis, a cohort reconstruction of coded wire tag recoveries. It's done by brood year. It's routinely done every year for 38 indicator stocks. It maps the coded wire tag recovery locations into 61 fisheries and typically aggregates these into 32 fisheries, one of which is escapement. I mean, that's treated by the analysis as another fishery, though it's the first one in your backward reconstruction of the cohort. It provides age and year-specific estimates of exploitation rates and the maturation rates, as well as a brood survival for the coded wire tag groups. And it's typically a year out before data are complete. So our 2012 exploitation rate analysis includes coded wire tag recoveries through 2010. And then it's another 3 years before brood recoveries are nearly complete. So 2012 exploitation rate analysis has complete broods up through 2004 to 2005. So there's really quite a lag there. GSI is still an emerging technology in fisheries management. It's not yet used in stock assessments. It does provide estimates of stock composition from samples, fishery samples, and It provides probable stock identity of individual fish that are sampled. It has been used to shape fisheries to target or avoid specific stocks. And it's used to identify the stocks in the resident killer whale diet studies. And then we have the Park and Cope indices. For the Canadian stocks, these use actual terminal run data. Stocks were disaggregated to a finer scale than the CTC model stocks, and pre-terminal fishery impacts were estimated from coated wire tag recoveries. Missing values were filled in using assumptions. But it was basically, those expansions were made by calendar year, includes fishing, the incidental fishing mortality. Basically, it's terminal run data and using the expansions that are derived from our exploitation rate analysis. For the U.S. stocks, these indices are basically the terminal run and catch escapement that come out of the CTC model, summed by calendar year. That's basically what they are. So they're in Eric's presentation, as I've said, I think in my last presentation, most of these data sets that we use are very consistent. Our exploitation rate analysis gives very similar exploitation rate estimates to what the CTC model does. And so Eric had pointed out that the Park and Cope indices agreed with the CTC data, and the Fram seemed to be the outlier. Well, it's not real surprising because they're basically the same data. And in fact, I was surprised that Fram doesn't agree more closely with the CTC model, because about 95% or more of the data used in the two models are the same data, the same terminal run estimates, catches, and they use similar algorithms. So, comparing all these different tools, the exploitation rate analysis, GSI, and Park and Cope indices are strictly retrospective and descriptive of what's happened in the past. The CTC model and Fram are both retrospective and predictive. And examine what's happened in the past, and we can project what we expect in the future. So only the CTC model and Fram can be used to evaluate the impacts of proposed fisheries. Both rely on very similar assumptions, the same assumptions in most cases. Both are limited by the accuracy of the data, the accuracy and precision over catch and escapement estimates, and the abundance forecasts. Now, so those data are, the quality of those data are of interest. Catch data, commercial catches enumerated from sales records, recreational catches, very well sampled. You typically sample at greater than 20% for coated wire tags. The stock composition is not known. GSI can be used to inform that, but we don't have a one-to-one correspondence between the GSI and genetic reporting groups and the management units that we use for fisheries management. So the stock composition that we, the stock compositions that we have in catch data are currently inferred using either the CTC model or Fram. For escapement estimates, our gold standard is marker capture estimates. I would say the platinum standard is probably dam counts, but there are reasons for not using dam counts. I mean, dams, it's kind of like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. You get a better count of the fish, but you're also affecting the fish run. These are the only, the marker capture estimates are the only estimates for which we have estimates of precision. The accuracy depends on meeting the assumptions of the estimator, and it probably varies pretty widely. Red counts, carcass survey, spawner counts are more common. We don't have estimates of accuracy or precision for the most part, but some have been checked against market capture estimates. And this is a figure from a CTC report where we looked at groups of stocks for which we have market recapture estimates. And these are the estimates of the coefficient of variation for Canadian stocks on the top, Southeast Alaska stocks in the middle figure, and Oregon stocks in the lower figure. And for the most part, the coefficients of variation are less than 15%, but many of them are greater than that, and these are the best estimates that we have of spawning escapement. Precisions of forecasts, we have summarized the accuracy of those in another draft report for the CTC, and it depends somewhat on the stocks for escapement indicator stocks that we have accepted escapement goals and are really scrutinizing. We have an average coefficient of variation of 30% in our forecasts for stock components used by the CTC for various purposes. This coefficient of variation is 47%. For agency forecasts for model stocks, coefficient of variation is 31%, and then the model is the CTC model generates forecasts of stocks as well, and the coefficient of variation of those forecasts is 41%. So, to summarize this, my conclusions from all this, but all of these estimates of salmon abundance have large uncertainties. But when you examine many correlations using noisy time series, you will find spurious correlations. The highest correlation does not necessarily denote the best predictor. because the two tools that we have for evaluating the effects of fishery management, projecting the effects, are Fram and Chinook. Both share mostly the same data, and they share the same algorithms, many of the same assumptions. Because of the greater stock, fishery, and time resolution, Fram, I think, is probably the best tool for evaluating fishery impacts, especially for southern residents. As an example, if you want to evaluate what the impact is of closing the non-treaty troll fishery in Nia Bay, which is Marine Area 4 in Washington, during the month of August, you're better off using a model that has July through September in areas 3 and 4 as a time area cell, and non-treaty troll as a fishery rather than a model that has the entire Oregon and Washington coast for an entire year and all troll fishing in there as a single time area fishery cell. And that concludes my talk. Take any questions you might have.
I thought the panel.
Has there been any out-of-sample comparison between either Fram and the other model with mark recapture? I mean, you held up mark recapture as the gold standard, and I certainly understand that because it's a true observation with known uncertainty and so on. Have you ever compared what these models predict relative to your gold standard?
In terms of escapement numbers, the escapement numbers are used as model.
In terms of anything.
Used as model inputs.
Okay, let me ask you a different. Have you ever done any out-of-sample validation of these models?
We have made comparisons between what the CTC model predictions are, model predictions of exploitation rates are.
Uh-huh.
With the exploitation rate analysis, which is an independent comparison, and they agree pretty well.
Okay.
But you know, the exploitation rate analysis is just the coded wire tags, where the model is projecting that to stocks that are both of mixed stocks of hatchery and natural origin.
Well, let me ask a question to both of you, and I think you actually probably weigh in on this too, and I hope I can articulate this question well enough. Your presentation is just stimulated, so I'm going to have a go at it. But it's worried me from the beginning that we have, as independent variables, in a fairly sophisticated multi-stage analysis, we don't have observations, but we have model predictions as the X's. Right? And we brought that up in the first workshop. Eric responded to it in the second. These model predictions have coefficients of variation of 50%, some of them. I mean, in your analyses where you looked at sensitivities to errors and variables, did you look at 50% standard CVs that were that broad? It's just hard to imagine that couldn't have enormous impacts that translate through the final result. I remember that's what you said, is that the observation error in the X's really didn't matter that much. But it's just hard to imagine that could be the case. I mean, can you, with standard deviations that large, they don't propagate through your final prediction?
No, that definitely does propagate through the predictions. And that's why forecasting, I mean, I think we've talked about this over and over, forecasting beyond about 5 years is really difficult.
Okay.
I mean, and I think the panel has recommended that we not do that.
So here's the other question. This is the one I'm going to have a sort of a hard time articulating, but maybe you can help me out. So you've got these independent variables that are based on the model output that's and translated into an index. And so now you have a model for which you're going to say, well, what can we expect as an output if we change the input by 20 or as you point out, 25%? But that change is based on a different data set, different approach than the way you estimate the X's. So
clarify that last point.
So this 25% is not on the same scale as the variation in your predictor variables, right? I mean, it comes from a completely different source. And the units in that 20% change were not measured in the same way as the units in your X's, right? Maybe I'm not seeing that, but
take on that is if it's a relative change, it doesn't really matter what the units are.
Sure, it does. A relative change in something that's in meters and something that's in kilometers is a big difference.
But a 50% increase is a 50% increase.
A 50% increase in 10 meters is different than a 50% increase in 10 kilometers.
I agree with that. I mean,
I guess what I'm really saying is that the proportional change that you use in forecasting, we don't really know if that's on the same scale as the X's that are in your regression. Am I right or wrong?
I think we would have to talk about this. I don't fully understand. I think for the projections, the amount of variation in the projections is smaller than the variation in the X's. Right? So if we change salmon abundance by 20%, the change in the growth rate is, we're not increasing the growth rate by 20%, we're increasing it by a very small fraction. So the range of variation in our output smaller than
I think
we can talk about.
I think you may have to talk this about the cartography because it's a bit in the weeds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's maybe important weeds, but I think it's going to be hard to resolve in the short time we have here. Sean?
You made a comparison, well, you brought up the competing risk of death model and noted that FRAM most closely approximates that because of the discretization within a season. But from what I understand of FRAM, it applies a constant natural mortality rate. It just says at the start of each season, a fixed fraction is taken from the stock.
Yes, it does.
But I think we've, at least what I've learned over the last year, is that a large part of that natural mortality is caused by killer whale predation. And if killer whales maintain any kind of stable consumption, total population consumption, like was pointed out yesterday, hundreds of thousands of fish, then that natural mortality rate is changing a lot, especially when Chinook abundance is low.
So the rate is changing a lot, yes.
The natural mortality rate,
yeah.
So I think that's that was the basis behind the competing risk of death suggestion, is that, and I can't really predict what effect that's going to have on all these indices, but have you got any, through the Cotabar tag, market capture, or whatever, any indication of changing natural mortality? Is there any way to try to measure that?
I don't think there is. Dave has worked on that. The problem is that we also see variability in maturation schedules. And in the recovery data, the two are confounded, the mortality rate and maturity rates. When you see changes in the age composition of the recoveries from an individual brood, you don't know whether that's due to changes in survival or changes in maturity rates.
You can't measure from...
Allison.
Hi. Yeah, I'm hoping that the panel and Robert and others can just think about this and perhaps give some feedback today or through your report or by whatever means. But this is kind of what I've been struggling with is this whole issue how we evaluate effects of fishing on killer whales. It seems like it's kind of a tiered modeling approach. You've got a model or models, many that could generate or quantify what the change in abundance or availability is from fishing, and then you've got another model that could use a variety of indices of varying abilities to really well predict the effect of Chinook abundance on killer whale demographics. And then you need to somehow bring those together to address what is the effect of that change in Chinook abundance on the killer whales demographics. And how do you go about doing that if you're using different indices or models that might have different time steps or assumptions inlaid to make any sort of ultimate kind of consideration or conclusion about the impacts? I'm not sure. There seems to just be a lot of problems in doing that.
Well, I think that was one of the points you asked the panel to deal with, right?
Yeah.
You sent to the panel, so that's one of the key things we'll be talking about tomorrow.
Okay.
Great.
I just want to follow up on a question that was raised after your first talk, which is, has anyone calculated what the long-term average run size, how it would differ if Chinook harvest was eliminated? That was working through assumed production, spawner recruit relationships, etc. And it's going to be more than just the immediate reduction in catch as you work through spawner recruit.
Yeah, I don't think that's been done.
What is the, the range of, or possible range of stock-specific harvest rates around the 16% average that you mentioned?
Well, I haven't looked at the numbers, but that's what was presented in those pie charts, really.
There were no numbers on the pie charts.
No.
So in terms of harvest rates, does it range from, you know, up to 25-30%?
Oh, on some of the stock, certainly it's that high. On some of them, I mean, and these are just the harvest rates or exploitation rates in pre-terminal fisheries. So it doesn't include the terminal areas and what happens in the rivers and stuff like that.
Okay, so that what Ray's talking about, the long-term changes,
yeah,
can be quite large.
It could potentially be, yes.
Quick question.
So it's another modeling change.
So, seems like kind of a naive question, but so the only data, if I understand, that we really have on Chinook abundance, or adult Chinook abundance anyway, is escapement, so what is spawning, basically, spawning counts of some sort, or dam counts, and catch.
Yes.
That's the only source of data that you, or and then some age and so forth. Is there any relationship between the two, if you will, in the sense that, I mean, do you have some direct, you've shown some of this before, that, you know, you're sort of making a lot of inferences that if you reduce catch, you'll increase the terminal escapement. It seems like somehow you ought to be able to kind of ground truth that historically and see if you, in terms of this question of natural mortality, that, you know, do you get these sort of expected increases in escapement with lower catches that you'd expect given certain assumptions about what you think is happening in your model?
I don't know if that's simple because, I mean, as you're aware, the salmon populations are pretty volatile. And when, you know, we have shut down fisheries on a large area of the coast. We did recently because of the collapse of the Sacramento Fall Chinook. Now, if you look at that on the surface, we had record low escapements of Sacramento Fall Chinook when we shut down fisheries. So, you know, when you make that comparison, you could come to the conclusion that, gee, if we shut down fisheries, we run out of fish. So I don't see any way to really get it. I don't think there's a way to tease that out of data because fisheries management is responding to abundance, and, you know, it's not an independent variable. It's not an independent control.
Wait, people done?
Good.
I just have to go to the next talk, so thanks very much.